the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
Consequence Podcast Network.
People, Leo Phillips here with This Must Be The Gig, your little backstage pass to the world of live music. Every single week we bring you fascinating conversations from the beating heart of the performance scene with some of the most exciting names on this big, gigantic, spongy globe. We talk passion, we talk first concerts, insights into the creative mind during this truly unusual time, and everything in the juicy center.
This week, we're excited to share a conversation with Dave Bailey, the brilliant and charming frontman of Glass Animals.
I'd literally just walked off the front of the stage.
The English outfit formed in 2010 and have since grown into one of the most thrilling acts on the festival circuit. Alongside longtime friends Drew McFarlane, Edmund Irwin Singer, and Joe Seward, Dave and the band have now penned 3 albums worth of hip-hop-tinged psych-pop, including the recently released Dreamland. And while fans might be missing out on Glass Animals' cancelled tour, the record's blend of intense autobiographical storytelling and woozy soundscapes will make them feel right at home. Not to mention, the stems and graphics are up for grabs in the form of open-source files on the band's website, in order to recreate the communal feel. Lior spoke with Dave about putting the band's tour on hold, his history in cake baking, meeting Radiohead, breaking his foot after falling off stage, and so much more. So let us not be delayed. This is Lior and Dave. Enjoy!
You're the fifth Leo that I've rang trying to find you, but I feel very accomplished now.
I'm the only one that matters.
You are. You're the best. You're my favorite one. Everyone else is a bit moody, to be honest, but this is good.
You know, it's really funny because I was actually thinking the other day, like we used to, when I was younger, I'm going to show my age, but we used to prank call like all the time. Like that used to be our thing. We used to just pick up the landline and prank call.
What, and just dial any number?
Just dial any number and then expect to have some sort of silly conversation with the person on the other side. And I wonder if, like, do kids do that? Do kids these days?
I don't know. Bloody kids these days. I remember, the only thing I remember doing when I was younger was me and my friend would pick up the phone and just push 0 for the operator.
Okay.
And then we'd ask the operator if they had any dinosaur toys or something like that. And they'd say no. And we'd go, and then that would be it.
I feel like if you enter into one of those jobs, also that job is gone now, right? You can't call a directory.
What happened to all the operators in the world? That's really sad.
I swear, they're probably living on some island with their feet up with all the missing socks.
I think they got a payout. Oh, yeah, the missing socks, missing earplugs is a big one for me.
Oh, what do you mean? Oh, like protective earplugs.
Yeah, I always sleep with earplugs because I'm always on a tour bus. And they always bloody go missing. It's really annoying. I just have little disposable ones, but I get through thousands of them. Thousands and thousands. What else
Maybe
goes missing? Guitar
just...
picks, always.
I was going to shit talk your ear for a second, but maybe that's maybe that's not okay.
No.
We've just met.
Yeah, maybe my ear is swallowing them.
But when you're on stage, you're obviously using custom built earplugs, right?
On stage I use custom ones. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I leave those in with my guitar. And I just use these little I usually steal them from venues because sometimes venues you like they have them in the back of the venue. If you go to the bar, they have a big bucket of earplugs, so if you like
you don't like
the big loud noise. Yeah, yeah, for all the bar staff as well who sadly exposed to loads of crazy noise all their careers. Mm-hmm. So I normally just steal a couple from each venue, but they just keep bloody going missing. So I always thought it was like a little mouse who lives in a bunch of socks.
No, it's
and
your
steals
ears.
The earplugs.
You just have weird ear holes.
I thought my ears, yeah. I thought
like
my hearing changed recently.
Oh no.
They're all stuck in there. There's loads of them probably. Oh, that's disgusting. I hate
that's
that.
Horrible. What, you
hate
that
idea
visual?
So much. I just hate the idea of being loads of things stuck in my ears. It really freaks me out. Not for me. Ugh.
So it seems like you're doing well in quarantine.
Does it? Yeah. What makes you think? I don't know.
I mean, you're having a human conversation.
I'm trying. Yeah, this
hard.
Is the first conversation I've had in months. No, actually, I've been doing all right, you know. I'm used to spending a lot of time. I'm in my studio now. I spend a lot of time in here. I made the album in here. And then lockdown happened and I just had to come back here. We were meant to be on tour, but instead it was just more of a normal life for me, really. Not too different.
But it's amazing that you were able, didn't you play some shows even momentarily before the quarantine happened?
Yeah, we did. So what did we do? We did like 12 shows or something. Yeah, just got about most of the way across America. Actually, we got from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast and then we kind of couldn't finish the last little bit of West Coast, which was like, yeah, Seattle, Portland. We owe you guys.
I don't know what the world is going to look like after this is all. I mean, I feel like everyone's already opened up. I'm just still one of the assholes that's not or very clever.
You're still scared.
Well, I mean, there's still a pandemic and I'm just kind of confused as to what. I suppose it shows a lot about your friends and your family. Like, it shows you where your boundaries are immediately, because I feel like none of my friends are going out and sitting at restaurants, even though it's allowed.
That's probably very good. I mean, that's probably very good.
Where are you?
I'm in London, and we don't really know what the rules are because offense to our government,
yeah.
But they are insanely vague with their instructions. They recently said something about some kind of you're allowed to have a friendship bubble if you're
in
lockdown alone.
Yes.
Yeah, but really no restaurants are open yet. None of the stores are really open. They're meant to be allowed to be open, but none of them actually have opened. Everyone's a bit stuck, and then everyone gets fed up by the weekend, and there are thousands and thousands of people in the park, and the police try to clear them out. And as they get to the other end of the park, the people have kind of repopulated the other
side of
the park again. And everyone in the band has gone a little bit nuts in different ways. One of them started trying to make his own brewery in his house, and apparently it was absolutely... it was disgusting, whatever he made.
But I like the idea of also embracing one's hermiting, especially during this time, because I feel like in the beginning of all of it, I feel like it's been precisely 5,000 years since we all quarantined. But in the beginning, were you also feeling that sense of, I have to do something, I need to make sourdough bread, I need to start a brewery, I have to make music? Like, how much of that pressure did you feel from the beginning?
We had this whole, like, album release campaign planned out to within an inch of its life. We'd pushed go, and the whole of my like next 2.5 years were planned out every minute. And then that whole plan just went out the window. And so I had a lot of cleanup to do. There was a lot of cleanup to do. We basically had to evacuate the United States and just empty our equipment out of our bus into like a truck. It's still sitting in a truck somewhere in America. I think it's in Tennessee, just like locked and waiting for us to come back because we didn't know when we were going to be able to go back. And honestly, since then, I've just been like trying to plan how to release an album. Mm. The album to me is the music, and then the touring happens. It's one thing. That's the album. The music, the tour, the stage show, right. The artwork, it all comes in. They're all big players in it, and just working out how to compensate for that. It's like losing the legs of the album.
Right.
Losing the tour.
Right. Because it does. It's all part of one big globule. And they all
yeah exactly
hand.
Yeah.
But the announcement though that happened with I saw the music video that you. I love the best part about the music video for obviously people who are going to be listening to this conversation down the line. You did it all via Zoom, and you set it up on your own. And then the best part was at the end when all the credits come up and it's just your name next to
everybody. Oh yeah, it was.
Every
a nightmare. It was so hard. It's
oh, it
so
looked
difficult.
Like a nightmare. It looked like so much fun. Come on.
In retrospect, it was fun. But at the time, it took 4 days, mainly because my place is on the third floor of a building, and a big truck pulled up like 200 meters. It didn't even park right outside the building. It was like 200 meters down the road, and just opened the door, and then I got a phone call saying there's a truck with its door open down the end of the road.
Go take
carry
things.
Everything into your house now. Go. And it was so much stuff. So much stuff. Huge like metal stands, giant lights. There were like 20 light fixtures. There was a whole like framework to make this giant tent construction, this tunnel in my living room. And there was like a roller coaster track. And I had to bring all of that up. And a like cinematography camera, like a proper film camera.
Yeah. It looked beautiful.
It's a monster. Oh, thanks. In retrospect, it was really great. It was an exhausting 4 days. And that's what I've been filling my time with, doing really ridiculous, crazy things like that, not making sourdough bread. As much as I'd love to make, like, I don't know, I love cake. That's my favorite thing. I make a good cake.
What kind of cake?
I make really good chocolate cake. It's like a little bit melted. It's still like a bit squidgy on the inside. Put a bit like vanilla ice cream on top.
Look what you've done. I don't want to do this. Let's just eat cake.
We should.
Cake right now.
I know. That's what I want. Instead of making these bloody music videos.
Yeah.
No, I really liked doing it. But yeah, we've been problem solving. That's what we've been doing.
I mean, I think that it's so jarring to have any sort of obstruction to your normal routine, whether that's like even if your tour is happening and your flight gets cancelled. I mean, there's numerous things that happen on even within a controlled plan. So I think that when something like this happens where it's completely derailed, I almost feel like it's almost better. Because then at least you have some sort of control and expectation in what isn't going to happen, right?
That's true. Yeah, you're saying it's so chaotic. It's not even worth trying to organize anything.
Half full, right? There aren't many.
That is, yeah.
There aren't many rules for right now, which I find is actually a fascinating thing. Especially everybody that I've been speaking to. Whilst in the beginning there was this sense of I need to create now, I feel like everyone's just kind of fucked up and also done nothing and then also been depressed and then also had the time of their lives. Like this pacing, I've strangely really loved not leaving.
I've secretly loved it too.
Like I've hated that people have died and I've hated
That's
that
terrible.
I can't go home and I can't, you know, go visit my family and I've got to constantly like watch the news, but that's one side of it. But I definitely think Do you feel like your approach to touring, well, at least your own artistry, do you think that it will shift a little? Like, what do you think it will look like when all of this is done?
Well, weirdly, that's actually what our next music video is kind of about. Yeah, it's kind of a commentary on that, on what the touring industry is going to look like for the next couple of years. It is definitely going to change things. I was just on a call trying to work out how the heck we're going to do a live show in the current climate. And there's just nothing that feels quite right. The technology is not quite there. It's okay if you're like a solo act and you want to just like play piano and sing. That's quite easy. But to do something really spectacular is really hard. So we're going to try and work out a way to do that. That's going to be the next like tour. It's not really a tour, I guess. It's just a show. And then touring itself, I can only hope that things open up next year. But I do think there will be a kind of a bit of social distance. People are going to have to be like 2 meters apart in the crowd. They're going to be this little.
I don't know how that's possible.
I think it's going to really lose the energy. Part of the energy is people interacting and people feeling like they're all a unit and together and on the same wavelength. I think that's all going to go. People, like, what I've been speaking to people about is like these pods. They've been making these little isolation pods.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah, and they'll have like a little table inside, but you and the people you live with.
A Zorb. What are those things
called? Yeah, like literally a Zorb. It's basically that. And drive-ins. I think it would. Yeah, they'd both be really sad. Really, really sad. I think that's what it's going to be like for the year.
But why is that the best? I feel like that's not the best option.
Underground. I've thought about illegal stuff too. I've been tempted to just do like a kind of secret underground rave. And it'll get broken up by the police.
Oh, I think it's already happening. I feel like I spoke to somebody the other day and they were like, yeah, I was invited to this party at this warehouse the other day, but I just didn't want to go. And I was thinking, like, wow, that's an entire different life. Like, here I am, like, planting peppermint in my, on my porch. And
I planted mint. That's
Did you?
I did too. I did
mint.
Peppermint,
mint,
yeah.
Mint in hot water.
Yeah, mine died.
So mine died too.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm glad it wasn't.
No, but listen.
It's a really hard one.
I wanker of a plant. You wanker. I actually planted it way too early. I just got too excited that just a snippet of sun had come out in Chicago and ran out, bought mint, planted, and then it was like,
too
what
early.
Are you crazy?
Yeah, I've got one little mint plant left. I bought three and one of them surviving, but I'm quite good at plants too. Like, I love plants. I've got like palm trees in my studio, palm trees in my house. It's like the one thing I'm good at in life, aside from making chocolate cake.
In the video, I love how proud you are that you can bake chocolate cake.
I can make a good chocolate cake. That's it. That's the only skill I have. I can make pancakes too. Like, pretty good pancakes.
I don't know what's the difficulty level of a pancake.
Well, it's just getting the mixture right.
Yes.
That's all.
Okay.
And then it's pretty easy. And then it's the flip once it's in the pan.
And how many flips
you can do.
Okay.
Yeah. My record is like 186 flips.
No.
Yeah. No, I've never. I can definitely flip. I'm pretty good at that.
Like parkour? Like your maybe, body? Oh, no, you're talking about pancakes.
Pancakes, yeah, yeah. I like to think I can do parkour, but I suck.
You know,
I'm really rubbish.
I'm so embarrassed to actually admit this. It has nothing to do with the things that I'm actually curious to ask you, but I feel like I have always secretly wanted to do parkour. Like, I feel like I've always.
Do you do it?
No. No.
You know what? You should just do it.
I don't know if that's good advice. I don't think you have.
I think it's good advice.
My best interest at heart.
I think you should do it. I have a game that's called James Bond, mm-hmm. and you can do it on the tube, on the train, especially now when the underground in London is totally empty.
Right.
You basically, when you get off the tube, you have to jump from the middle of the carriage about 2 meters behind where the doors open. And as you jump, you need to grab the railing that's on the ceiling and swing out of the carriage, land on your feet and go into a forward roll.
Okay.
And then you get up and you make a kind of gun thing with your hands.
Or like just a gymnast, like 10 points.
Yeah, maybe, okay, okay. Maybe, no, yes, okay. The gymnastics version is much more right. Peaceful.
Yeah, I think so.
But that's a sort of parkour.
Tumultuous times. That is a sort of parkour. I don't think yeah. I've even been able to like jump from one spot to that. Like, I feel like the only time I ever jump is like if I'm doing like Pilates or yoga and I'm like,
do you jump in Pilates? What kind of Pilates are you doing with jumps?
Well, if you're doing a Pilates move and you're standing up and it's kind of a half Pilates, half yoga, you'll jump.
I think you're doing it wrong. I think you're doing it wrong. Pilates isn't, and yoga isn't that meant to be like really peaceful movements?
Oh no. I mean, Pilates is pretty fucking insane. It's like incredibly, incredibly challenging.
I mean, I'm totally ignorant to most forms of exercise.
You're just making chocolate cake.
I eat a lot of chocolate cake and then I do, you know, James Bond. That's about
Wait,
as the
so
extent.
Do you actually do
my exercise?
Do you do it?
Absolutely. Do yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And sometimes I have gotten, I got a bit.
On stage.
I do. I should. I really should. I do a bit of like jump. Once I climbed up really high on the side of a stage and then couldn't get down. That was bad.
Isn't that a nightmare? Isn't that a
yeah,
nightmare?
It was a nightmare?
Because you've seen people do it and you're like, fuck, that looks so cool. And then you get up there and you're like a cat.
And it's really high up and scary. Yeah.
Where were you?
It's really
Where
high
was
up.
Where was this?
I think it was actually at Coachella, that big festival in America. Right. I've also, I just fell off the front of a stage once and broke my leg. That was bad.
Shit.
I've had a lot of accidents on stage, actually.
How did you
Chipped
fall
teeth.
Off? Oh my God.
I literally just walked off the front of the stage. It was that simple. It was just, I wasn't looking right.
It's
it was
actually not hard.
As I walked
was it
on stage, it wasn't dark. It was broad daylight. I was in Chile, the country.
Yes.
It was beautiful outside, nice sunny day. Festival was like, I don't know, it was like six, not quite sunset, just still bright outside.
Oh my God.
The whole like intro music goes and I start walking on stage and I don't stop walking on stage and I walk straight off the front. That was it. That was how the show started. I broke my leg.
But were you distracted? Did you forget how to walk?
No, I simply just, you know how your mum always tells you to look where you're going? I forgot that basic rule of life.
You forgot that rule.
Yeah, they're like those basic rules. Don't play ball in the house. Look where you're going. Wash your hands. You know, all of those are very, very important rules.
That is
She was
so
very
funny.
Right. Now everyone has coronavirus because they didn't wash their bloody hands. Like, she was so right.
And walking into the abyss. So wait, so you fell off and then broke your leg?
Fell off, yeah, broke a bone in my, it was like the heel bone.
Ow.
The actual big heel bone was just like broken in half and I had to wear a cast for ages.
Was it painful?
Yeah, it was really quite painful. I had quite a lot of adrenaline because there was a big crowd and I was like pumped. So I didn't really feel it at first.
Did you do
Finished
the show?
Finished the show.
Oh my God, you did
yeah.
the show.
Got back up and did the whole show. Then afterwards, looked down and it looked like there was a grapefruit on the side of my leg.
Swelling, huh?
Huge swelling.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And then the guy from Rancid, you know that punk
yes.
band Rancid?
Yeah.
Yeah, he came up and he was like, dude, that looks really bad. I'm a huge fan, so I was like, whoa.
I'm a fan.
Whoa, thanks.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Hi. Dude,
how are you
go
with
to the
meeting
hospital.
With meeting your idols?
Awkward. I'm quite an awkward person, I think. Yeah. Have I met my idols? Who have I met?
Yeah, who have you met? I feel like because you guys have been touring for so long.
I've met a few. I've met Radiohead, that lovely. Really nice. They're sweet.
They are sweet.
Have you met them?
Not Tom, but everybody
No,
else.
Me neither. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody
I've met
gets to
a couple
meet
of
Tom.
Them. They seem really nice. I'm a huge fan, so I was a bit. I didn't say anything. They just. I just sat there silently.
Pause the podcast.
It's
It's time to step away from the conversation with Dave from Glass Animals ever so briefly to share a special segment. We typically like to share our favorite live show or live stream of the week, but we want to continue putting a spotlight where it's most needed and instead highlight an organization we think you should contribute to. This week, we're highlighting Healthy Hood Chicago, an organization working to close the 20-year life expectancy gap between high-income and underserved communities in Chicago through everything from educational health resources to dance classes. To contribute, head to healthyhoodchi.com/donate. That's healthyhoodchi.com/donate. But for now, back to Lior and Dave. Enjoy!
And then I was in the studio working on this album. I was playing this song called Heat Waves. I was like listening to it for the last time, putting the finishing touches on. And then the song finished. Yeah. And I heard someone behind me, there's a piano behind me, and someone was playing on it. And I turned around, and all I could see was just a bunch of hair and a big cigarette or spliff coming out from behind this hair and a glass of wine. And I was like, whoa, who's that? And the voice just said, it's Johnny. And I was like, what? What does that mean? And then I went around and looked, and it was just Johnny Depp, just there.
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp was there. Yeah, I don't know why. I couldn't tell you. He hung out for ages. We spoke for, I don't know, a good 20 minutes. He told me some amazing stories. He told me how he came up with the accent for Willy Wonka.
Did you ask? Is this all great? Unprompted?
No, I didn't really say anything. He was just telling me stories. It was great. He did a Donald Trump accent, which I thought was really interesting, really funny. He was bang on.
Which studio, where did you record?
This was just like a little session. It's a studio called The Church in London, North London. Yeah.
Are you sure it was Johnny Depp and not just...
You know what? Maybe someone who looked like Johnny Depp. It was someone else. Maybe it was Jimmy Depp. No, I don't know. It was absolutely certainly
that
him
is,
because a
that
few
is crazy.
Yeah, a bit of time went by, and then some big dudes came in and were like, "Is Johnny here?" And I was like, "Yeah, he's here." He's like, he got lost.
Oh, so he just wandered into the studio. Do you think he's like friends with the studio owner?
I think he was friends with whoever was recording in the... There's like three studios
area.
And there's one big studio and there's always like ABBA or someone in there.
Yeah.
And I think whoever was in there, he must have known them and been there.
Always recording.
No, I know, you know... sorry, you know... I don't know. I was just trying to think of a big act.
No, I know what you mean.
I don't know why they were the first one that came to my head.
I think it's really funny though to think of like this whole thing... was just a ruse. Like, it's a long con. Like, none of his career... He didn't actually want to start acting. He actually just wanted to be in Glass Animals. And so his whole life, he's become famous enough so that while you're singing, he can just pop into a studio uninvited and not be questioned why he's there.
I'd really, really doubt that's the case.
Listen,
wait.
I don't make the rules.
You don't make the rules. All right, you should ask him. Why don't you get him on the phone?
No. I have conflicting views about Johnny Depp.
Yeah, of course,
I mean,
of course.
We all do. So it's very difficult because I feel like it's one of those conversations that you have regarding the art versus the artist and if those two are able to separate. And I think initially when I first... became a critic and or was like writing about music many years, like a decade ago, I feel like I was able to separate it because I wasn't really in tune with the other side. I was still so much of a fan, which I am still today, but I never saw how the rabbit was like taken out of the hat. You know, I never saw the things. And then I got more and more into it. Like, I'm sure as you did when you started performing, you know, you see the real side of it. And then I realize that it's very difficult to separate those two things.
It is. Yeah, you know? Absolutely. No, I feel that hugely. I've always found it very difficult. If I see an interview with someone, like a hero of mine, and it's
like,
they say something slightly sexist, just that's it. They're done.
They're done.
They're dead to me.
Right. I like that attitude, especially as a person who, I suppose, in the greater aspect of what the industry looks like, somebody who has a little bit more power, you know, I feel like that's really good that you think that. But I think that so much shit happens in this industry that you just can't, I don't know, you can't avoid it, but you also can't perpetuate it. You can't be part of it. But you can't not say anything.
I guess I struggle because I'm really shy and I quite like keeping things close and my opinions close. It's kind of how I was brought up to be. It's just keep your mouth shut.
Right.
That's what you're told to do growing up in America, like in Texas, where I grew up. Like,
well, how long did you live in Texas?
7 years, 6 years, 7 years.
Wow. Oh, wait, I read that aren't your parents, one is from Wales and one is from Israel?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Is your mum or your dad from Israel?
All over the place.
Yeah.
My mum.
Wow. Have you been back since?
She's Israeli. To America?
No, to Israel.
To Israel. Yeah, I have. Yeah. I've been a couple of times. And I love the people. Everyone's so open. I guess I have a different experience because a lot of my family's there. So obviously I would think that the people are very open and very kind because I'm hanging out with like family members.
Right.
I've always felt kind of at home there because of that. And I just, the friendliness is amazing. The food is incredible. There's really good food. The weather's great. It can be a scary place to live. It's not necessarily the safest. I think it's getting safer. There's a bit of a war. So, they have to be vigilant.
Where's the place that you haven't toured yet that you'd like to?
Well, is that Japan? I'd love to go to Japan. Oh my God, I'd love to go to Japan. It's the dream. It's just it's quite hard for us to, we've got a big touring park. We have a lot of equipment. It's quite a crazy live show in terms of just the technology and the equipment. We want everything to be live. I think I've seen a lot of shows that can travel anywhere because they push play on a backing track and they have a couple guitars. But we try to do everything live.
How big is your crew?
There's 20-something of us, about 22 of us. Yeah, it's a lot. But we have a lot of stuff. It's like a really complex live drum kit that's all got sorts of like triggers and stuff attached to all the drums. There's lots of synthesizers that are now kind of hosted on these crazy computer systems that we have because the analog synths are too much to, there's just so much maintenance, so much to carry, so much maintenance, they're worth too much. They go out of tune like a guitar, but worse depending on the temperature and the humidity. And then loads of guitars, and all those guitars are going through the computers and through the synthesizers. The drums are going through the synthesizers. The vocal stuff is going through the computers and the synthesizers. And oh, it's silly. So everything you hear has to be played. That's the, like, that's our, what's, I don't know, mantra or law. That's our principle. That everything you hear is live. There's none of this, like, secret backing track stuff. I just see way too much and it means you can adapt to the crowd, mainly.
You mean to tell me that you're recreating each night, each sound, and each song from the foundation instead of having something pre-recorded that you build onto?
Yeah, definitely. It means we change the songs every night. You know, if the crowd's like quite mellow and was, you know, maybe it's a sunset slot at a festival and you need to play a little bit more chilled out because no one's taken their ecstasy yet and everyone's like a little bit stoned, you can play everything a bit slower, more ambient, chilled out. And then if you're playing like a late night slot and it's a dance music festival, you can kind of hype up the tempos, you can change the drum. Everything can be reactive and totally change from night to night and you get a kind of slightly different version. And we mess up a lot, which is, that's part of live music.
There's always mistakes. Mess up in terms of like what initially was written or that you just lose your way together?
Well, sometimes things kind of go wrong. We've had to restart songs sometimes. But that's what live music should be like.
Right.
Sometimes it gets a little bit too far from the original. And I'll just be like, oh, that didn't go well. Let's try another one.
But if you are a little bit shy, then what sort of, who did you look up to in terms of performer that you wanted to essentially mirror, or somebody at least that made you feel quite inspired to perform in that way?
I've always been really afraid of performing. I hate the first like year, 2 years of shows that we did, I literally stood dead still on stage, panicking, like on the verge of peeing.
Oh,
no. I hated it so much.
Because of the pressure, the crowd, or because it's just not in your nature?
It's not in my nature. I hated being in front of people so much. I hated crowds. Yeah, I hated people looking at me. I still don't like photographs being taken of me. Like, it's weird. Yeah. But
I don't think that's weird at all. I think it's certainly, as you were talking, like, when we first started the chat, you were saying how, like, there's components of a rollout that feel natural. Write an album, record it, release it, tour it. And I feel like that part of it is something that you don't really necessarily get given the tools. You're kind of just expected to be able to perform. But I think that those two, especially from doing the show and chatting to so many different people about it, there's certainly sometimes a disconnect, which I think is so human.
I think so. Some people are taught the tools of that trade. Some schools offer like theater programs and music programs, and they have band nights and stuff. My school was not so much like that. I was like in the math club and the chess club, and we had stuff like that, but we never had, there wasn't
the
like a performing arts part. It was never a thing. It was never something that was an option. And doing anything creative was actually not really an option. The schooling was like, you do the syllabus, there's no creative stuff in the syllabus, you learn the facts, then you try to go to college.
I think we made candles the one time, like we had a candle making class.
Even that's cool.
That was cool. I don't
know really cool.
how to make it. I wish I could
They
now.
Should teach all that stuff. They should teach you how to make cake at school.
That's
they should
true.
Teach you like
Where did you
real
learn how
stuff.
To make cake? Who taught you?
My mom. Yeah, she can make good cake, but the rest, I don't know. She's a bit hit and miss. She makes a lot of really weird food.
Shit talking your mom's cooking.
Sorry, Mum. Yeah, she knows. She'll be the first to admit. She made me an omelette once and she cracked three eggs, stirred them up and put them in a plate and then put that in the microwave. And it was just like a solid...
Oh, my God.
It was like a frisbee. It was
but I feel like
completely
that's like,
solid.
I understand that in the concept of like you're breaking eggs to make like a shakshuka, like her Israeliness...
I think that's what she was maybe going
maybe
for.
She
yeah. She just loved the microwave. The microwave was like her favorite thing in the world.
Americans love... Do you know that that's how they make tea? I didn't realize that until I moved
here.
Well, like, no one has a kettle here. Like, I didn't know that was
not a
thing.
Yeah, that is true.
Like, they don't have a stovetop kettle or an electric kettle, so they put water into a mug... with a tea bag.
And then put it in the microwave.
And then microwave it. It's
That's
like
disgusting.
Drinking bath water. It's the same.
But it's a good
exactly
point.
The same.
I never thought about it. I guess I didn't really drink tea growing up, so I never thought about it. But you're right, I never saw a kettle.
Never
I
saw
just
a
saw
kettle. Never seen
macaroni
a kettle.
And cheese, microwave, hot pockets, which are like delicious pastries you put in the microwave. Mm,
I've not had one of those.
No,
I'm
I think if I had one now,
food.
I probably wouldn't. Who knows what's in it?
Exactly.
The barbecue one had some kind of mystery meat inside. Delicious.
But so what was the first show that you ever saw? So you moved from the States, from Texas at 7-ish, 7-8-ish.
Well, I was born in Boston. Well, not in Boston, like 2.5 hours out of Boston. This tiny little place called Grafton.
Mm-hmm.
Lived there for 7 years, then moved to Texas. And then 6 years later moved to England. And that's when I got into music properly.
So did you have an accent when you moved?
I had a really weird accent. My mum being Israeli,
having
lived in Texas and the Northeast, I just sounded so weird. I sounded really weird. I sounded like George W. Bush, but also like with a New York twang. It was weird.
So what was the first show that you saw? Was it in the States before you moved?
No, I did love music when I was in the States. I used to listen to a lot of hip hop in Texas, there were like two stations. There was a country station and a hip hop station. I love the hip hop station. My mum wouldn't want me to listen to it, but I did it anyway, secretly. I just like the bass. I like the way the bass made me feel. And I love the sound, the drum sounds, and the whole song made you feel like cool and swaggery.
This album feels like that too.
Oh, good. That's cool. I mean, the new sounds are all meant to be like a reflection of that, what I grew up listening to. So there's definitely like that element, that like reference to Dr. Dre, that reference to Timbaland. Those are the sounds that I grew up with in Texas, really.
So what was the first show that you ever saw?
Do you know Block Party?
Yes. I love Block Party.
I love Block Party.
Like
I
a lot. That first album what like changed my brain.
Incredible, right? It's the same.
And he's Kelly. He's
Kelly, yeah.
Phenomenal as well.
I met him recently, actually, wow. And that blew my mind.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what to say. He's very sweet. Very sweet. Very strong. Huge muscles.
Man. I feel like he just got over the band, and then obviously he did some of solo stuff, and I just remember that video. I can't recall. I feel terrible for not being able to recall the name of the song. But he's just walking down a street. Oh, Everything You Wanted. I have to Google it. You should watch that video.
Did he look really hench and handsome?
And he was kind of crying. It was really emotional, and it was one of the best performances like on a music video that I've seen. It was beautiful.
He's incredible. He's just a great songwriter. Seems like a really nice person. That's one of those, you meet your heroes and you're pleasantly surprised.
So wait, how old were you when you saw them?
I don't know. That was probably a couple of years after I moved to England.
Okay.
I was a bit shy when I didn't really have any friends when I first came, so I was the new kid, you know?
Yes.
And my first friends weren't really into music. I was just kind of lumped in with them at school because they were the Americans. Like there was two other Americans, and we were like kind of American together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started making some more friends who were more into music, and I don't know, maybe I was 15 or 16.
How old are you now?
I'm 30 now.
Okay. Wait, when did they... they started, 2005?
Yeah, I wonder, when was Silent Alarm? 2000, maybe it was 2005.
2000, I'm Googling. 2004.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So I must have seen... I think I moved to England when I was in 2004, probably.
Wow.
And then I probably went to see them when they played Brixton Academy, which was maybe 2005. I don't know for sure.
So do you feel like you found a lot of inspiration when you saw... But wait, that was your first show ever?
That was my first show ever, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an
no one would come with me until then.
First show.
Was it? Is that... I saw like a show in a pub before that, but not anybody I wanted to see. It was just someone's dad's band or something. I don't know.
I suppose, though, everybody has a different story. Because on the show, I always ask what your first gig was that you ever went to. And a lot of people lie. And then later, I get the real one. So a lot of people...
Oh, the real answer?
Yeah, because they're like, I don't know, Janet Jackson or, I don't know, somebody else. And then later,
truth comes out.
Oh, they were at the church and that was when they first...
I'm trying to think of
did
like...
Did you lie?
I was brought... to a concert, a country concert, when I was a kid.
That counts.
I can't remember the guy was called. That counts? Does it count?
No, it doesn't count because you don't remember it.
I don't remember it. I don't remember it at all, actually. I just remember it being loud. That was it. That was literally all I remember. It was some country singer. I don't remember his name. It was relatively big. It was maybe a couple thousand people.
When was the first time you figured that that was something that you wanted to do?
I never really thought it was an option. I always loved music and I thought music would be an amazing thing to do, but I was just always told it was a hobby and these people who make it are like freaks. It's like a freak story, you know.
Right.
They always have an amazing backstory. They were discovered by someone and it all blew up. And I was like, okay, it's not going to happen. I didn't know anyone in music. I didn't know anything about music, really. My cousin got me a guitar, and that's how I started, but I didn't think I was any good. Never thought it was a thing. And then in college, I started making some dance tracks. I was DJing for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a little bit of pocket money on the side. So at night, I'd do my classes in the day, and then I'd go do DJing at night and come back wired. I'd have like a couple of Red Bulls while I was DJing to stay awake because it was late at night. There's a place called Fabric in London. Yes. You know that club?
Yeah, I do. That's a
That's
big
where
club.
I started. It's a big club, but I had like the worst slots. I either had the last slot at like 6 a.m. when everyone was just too wasted to care.
Clubs could stay open that late. I don't know if they do. I don't know. Do they stay open?
I don't. I think some of them
Maybe
do in
do.
England. And or I had like the opening slot. So when people were walking in the door at like 11 to midnight. But yeah, that's just started making beats on like an old, I had a really old hand-me-down laptop. And that's sort of spiraled out of control. I don't know. I put a couple of these songs down and showed them to my friends from school. And they were like, oh, these are really good. Put them on SoundCloud. I put them on SoundCloud. And that was the beginning of the end. It all spiraled out of control. And now I'm here speaking to you.
Do you feel like your introduction into performance through DJing and things like that at weird slots, did that help you at all? Feel a little bit more comfy with sharing that side of you?
I don't know. Like Fabric is all about being quite, it's moody. It's dark. Mm. You're not really... It's not really about who's performing. It's more about it's just very music based. It's really dark. You can't really see the faces of anyone who's there. It's just you're in the zone with the music. And that's kind of always how I felt about music. It was like it was quite a serious undertaking. Like you had that's why when I first got on stage I was really nervous about everyone looking at me, and then I was really concentrated on playing everything absolutely perfectly. But then I kind of learned that that's not the right way to do it. We went to, but I learned how it's South by Southwest. That was like a kick in the ass. Yeah, the label sent us to South by Southwest. We did like 8 shows in 4 days.
Wow.
And you just had to get, like, it was going to be shit. It was, the sound was going to be bad. You had 10 minutes to plug all your stuff in. As I said, we had a really complex setup. None of it worked. So we just like had a lot of tequila and had fun on stage. And then I was like, that's how you do a live show, is you have fun.
Right. It sounds so simple in its form, but I think that that is definitely, I think that that extends to anything that you're passionate about, because passion can so often make you feel a little bit highly strung because you care.
Definitely.
So yeah, just relaxing into it, I think is... But also the audience feels that. Like, don't you feel that when you see a show and see a band on stage? Like, if they look uncomfortable, you will feel uncomfortable, like, straight away.
That's a huge thing. Absolutely, yeah. If they look nervous, you feel nervous. And I definitely made a lot of people feel nervous by looking nervous. Well, no, actually, not many people were coming to the shows. I remember we played one show to 2 people. And
wait,
it was my
where was that?
The crowd... was my friend, and I think it was her boyfriend or something. Or her, I don't know. It was in Leeds, Liverpool.
Oh,
I don't remember. And I remember, like, our rider at the time was very simple, very, very simple. It was like 4 beers and 4 waters, and that was it. And maybe some crisps.
Yeah.
And we turned up and they were like, guys, you haven't sold any tickets. So
you get nothing.
We have this one can of beer that we found behind the fridge that you can have. And that was what we had. And we shared that after the show. And it was terrible. Actually, you know what? We played and we probably had an okay time. But yeah. That's how it started for us. We played a lot of shows to 0 people.
How did that help? What did that teach you?
You know what? It makes me really, really, really appreciate where we are and how lucky we are to be where we are now and how much work has gone into that. When you really start like that, like we start, the first show we actually played was the bottom of a 4-band bill. It was the venue across from my house in England. And I went and gave them my, like, the demo tape that we'd put on SoundCloud. And they were like, cool, you can come down and play. And we only had like 7 minutes of music. That was it. So we played for 7 minutes. That was the whole show. Then we got, and 3 bands played after us. And when you look back at that, like thinking back about, it feels so mad.
even just being able to identify, like just listening to the new album, there's so much thematically that I feel like you haven't tackled that much before, in a way of, not to say that you feel more confident now, but there's definitely a scope that you're playing with that I haven't heard, if that makes sense. Like on, I think maybe it made me think that on Hot Sugar and...
Oh, yeah.
I love the little home movie interludes, which obviously...
Oh, yeah, that's on my mama. That's actually my mum. Yeah, yeah, they're actually pulled from... It's the audio pulled off of old home videos that she used to make of me and my brother growing up. Yeah, she's actually taken the audio out.
Oh, that's so smart. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's very personal. I don't know... I didn't know if anyone else would like it, but, you know, it's what... She's the person who's, like, that constant figure in my life. And that kind of ties all those moments that happen in the record together. She's been there the whole time.
I think that also Space Ghost Coast to Coast is such an incredible show. And I was so excited to see a track named after it. Like, it's from such a sweet spot where comedy...
I'm glad you like that show.
It's where, like, comedy can totally subvert any expectations and celebrity culture. And yet before, that was, like, a cool thing to do, you know?
Yeah, it's an incredible show. I rewatched a bit of it to kind of get back into the headspace of the song. But really, like, I was watching that when I was way too young to be watching that, I think.
I need to watch it again.
I definitely need to watch all of that stuff. I actually, you know what? I lie. I watched a lot of, like, old stuff. I tried to dredge up my past a lot, so I spent a lot of time watching things like that, watching old movies that I grew up with, a rewatch like The Karate Kid, Terminator.
There's a Karate Kid reference on one of the songs.
There is a Karate Kid reference, yeah, and there's like a reference to all the food that I used to eat, that like ridiculously processed American food right. that I grew up on. And then obviously it also references like stuff that I've, you know, more modern stuff, like people... I don't know, drinking acai berry smoothies right. and shit. That didn't exist when I was a kid. It was all Hot Pockets and Nintendo.
No wellness, love and light.
No, absolutely not.
Why did you think it was important then to bring a lot of you into this? Like, so often we're told that there's a few dangers around nostalgia. Well, at least I know... I'm a very sentimental person, but I know that a lot of people struggle. Oh, yeah, I'm very mushy. But, like, people struggle to, like, look back, because looking back could open this weird portal of where you were that time might not be have been kind to you, you know?
Yeah.
So what made you do that now? Because what, this is your third record?
Third, yeah.
So what made you...
That album, jeez. It's a couple of things, I guess. I've always written songs about other people and other things. That were kind of, you know, other things and circumstances and people that I could see myself in. So it's sort of a little bit self-referential, but not really. And not directly, not like this. And then I wrote one really personal song at the end of the last record called Agnes. Mm-hmm. And... I didn't want to play that live for ages, but when we started playing it live, I could see people's reaction to it, and people were like, I always cry playing that song because someone in the crowd cries, or several, like, the people in the front row always cry, and like, I was like, if writing a personal song can do that, I might as well keep trying. And then Joe had his accident, our drummer had a really bad accident, was in the hospital for a long time.
I saw that. Yeah. I'm so sorry, dude. I was reading about that.
Oh, no, you know
that.
What? He's getting a lot better, and... I was spending a lot of time in the hospital, and the future was doomed. Future looked so shitty that you just, and you know, what's around you is pretty scary. So you just sort of find this comfort in the past and nostalgia. Even if those things aren't particularly comfortable or nice, it's sort of more comfortable than what was going on and what I saw in the future. I actually wanted to write an album about the future before that happened. And then I got like totally stuck in my own head and memory and stuff.
I like that you saw the reaction of a crowd and felt that that connection was affirming as well. Because I think so often people are afraid to write material, whether you're a songwriter or a screenwriter or a writer. Like, material about your own life feels so self-referential and so self...
It feels self-indulgent.
Self-indulgent, right.
weird and selfish and all the selfs.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Especially as a Jew, you're kind of taught not to talk about yourself.
Ever.
It's
literally. So I still feel weird. It's like.
Oh yeah, you're a journalist.
Yeah, just want to tell everybody else's story.
Exactly. That's it. I grew up like that, and then I don't know. Just a few things gave me the confidence to do it. And you know what? I think I was doing a lot of writing for other artists after Joe had his accident. And after the first couple of weeks, he kind of started coming round and he was starting to move again and talk a little bit. And he basically said, like, go do your thing. I just need time to heal.
Wow.
Go do your thing. I went to LA and I started doing a lot of, like, writing for all sorts of things, all sorts of other projects. And
like what?
Yeah, production stuff. Mm-hmm. I was doing writing sessions with all sorts of people, some of my favourite people. I've done stuff with Flume. There was that song with Denzel Curry that we did that just came out. There's a Black with the Six and Khalid. And I did some like theme songs. Did a theme song for a cartoon that's going to come out soon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. I just had time, you know, and you realize that what people like and what people seem to gravitate to when you're writing for them is the personal stuff, the stuff that comes from the heart. So I kind of just kept doing it. Yeah.
I feel like that's also a good way to stretch what you, your perception of what this is all for, right? Because when you see that your own music has some sort of universal pull and people connect to it, I think that that, layer of why you do, like, why are you a musician? Is that a weird, that's probably such a weird question.
It is a really weird question. I often ask myself, I think this is the most selfish job in the world. I really do. But then you see, like, I guess it kind of plays back into why those other artists reacted to those certain bits of music that I wrote with them before them, because they saw themselves in it and it made them feel something good or bad, a healing, or it had a positive effect on them in some way. And I guess that's why you do it, to help people in some way. I know, maybe that's really arrogant to say. I don't know. I have this constant conundrum about this, where I'm like, how can you think that something that you've done can help someone?
I suppose, how can you not think it wouldn't? Like, if that is your service. Like, I feel like that's the foundation of the most, at least I'm projecting, but that's the foundation of the work that I do. Like, it has to help somebody in some way, or at least shift a perception in some way. Otherwise, what are you, you're not adding or taking away. You're just taking up space, I suppose. And what's the point in doing that if you can't impact somebody?
I hope that one day I can help someone write a song that properly changes the way someone feels.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll ever happen. I remember when I first heard In Rainbows by Radiohead, that changed my life. It was a really weird time in my life. Just landed at the right time, and it was a perfectly constructed album for that. Everyone I speak to sees the same thing, and it's weird. Geniuses, that's why. But sometimes you just need, I don't know, you need to go to that therapeutic place, that little healing place.
Absolutely.
Often it's in music. Some of those songs, like, save my life to some extent. And I just hope one day maybe I can help someone, I can, like, work on a piece of music that does that somehow.
Is there a song on the new album that you are particularly proud of where you took that tack?
I think there are there's a lot of stuff on the, basically, a few songs in the album that are about really dark things. And for some reason, those are the ones that seem to, like, be healing for people. Like that song Agnes that I was telling you about is really, really dark. That's about, like, probably the saddest thing that has happened in my life. And there are other songs that kind of get to that level of sadness within this record. There's a song called Domestic Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
That's like my first experience with, like, domestic violence. And then there's that Space Ghost song that's sort of toying with having someone in your life who you really love and care about, but is, you know, they break your heart and do something totally unforgivable and realizing that people, like, the people you love are going to hurt you. But ultimately, I guess the message is that, like, all this stuff happens in life. Bad things, funny things, confusing things, crazy things, messy things. But it's what you kind of build on top of that that's important and amazing and makes you who you are. And you can survive all that stuff and be stronger for it.
What is domestic bliss about? You mentioned that you experienced domestic violence firsthand.
No, that was just as a... So I was really... That's my first memory, that song. It's pretty heavy. I was, my friend used to pick me up from school. Well, his mum used to pick us up from school and we'd get into the front of his mum's truck. She had this little Toyota silver pickup truck that was really battered, and we'd all sit in the front. She'd drive back to his house, and it was a pretty weird place. Those were like dogs in cages and quite scary. And she'd go into the house, and we'd go out and play with the dogs and stuff, and we'd hear shouting in the house, and he'd turn to me and be like, "Oh no, like she's going to come out crying in a minute." Oh, no. And as soon as we heard shouting, we'd go lock ourselves back in the truck, and she'd inevitably come out sometime later with, like, tears, blood on her face. And I was too young to really know what was going on, but I just remember thinking, this is the coldest, most awful place in the world. All three of us have to get the hell out of here. And she'd come sit with us in the truck, and then we'd drive away. That's it. That's what that song is about. And just wanting to get the heck away.
I'm glad that you wrote a song that touches on that, though, because I feel like there are often experiences that you have on your own, in your own capacity, that might not be easy to retell. And not to say that this is, but there is something really strange about witnessing that when you're so young and then looking back on it when you're an adult and realizing all the things that you could have done. I think that's really brave of you to tap into that. How are you dealing with going back in your mind? Like, how did you make sure that you didn't fall out of balance? Like, how did you keep your it sounds like your bandmates are really supportive, but...
They're amazingly supportive, yeah. It's weird. A lot of the time, I was in a dark place for a lot of making this album, but you have to balance it out with the good things. You know, there are a couple dark songs on the record. There are a couple really cheeky, funny, playful songs. I don't know. I like an album that goes to all the places, and hopefully you kind of see the optimistic side of those dark songs, and hopefully speaking about it and being open about those things and being open about mental health and uncertainty in all other areas, just that kind of openness will encourage someone else to be open and change something, if, you know, just fix something in their life or in someone else's life and stand up for someone or something, do one little thing to help.
What do you feel like you're going to do when you're out? Like, what is do you feel like you'll look at touring and or like the carbon footprint of everything, or like how has your brain shifted, you know, to kind of be okay with the rollout not going as planned?
I think there's a couple of things. One is I really enjoy having to like amp up the creativity to fill that space that the void that no touring is created. So we've like had this open source thing. I just did a hologram. Yes. Of myself, weirdly, so I can perform in other people's living rooms. Wow. It's going to be weird when we put that out. We're doing, like, finding new ways to do videos, doing Mario Kart tournaments on Twitch, basically finding ways to, like, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people are having a bit of a tough time right now being isolated, and finding ways to have everyone to sort of, I don't know, have a little bit of light in their life. Be it like, I personally make a lot of music and that's really soothing, and I don't know, that open source thing is hopefully going to give someone a little bit of something, a place to start to either make some music, make some art, do something that just makes them feel a bit better.
Sharing stems and such, it's such a cool way to replace the community feeling that we're all missing without live shows. I think that open source site is such a great thing to have done.
I think going to see live music is so healing for me. I love going, and like, you kind of lose yourself in a minute, and you kind of, you join this like big shared consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, the open source was a kind of weird way of doing that. And all of these platforms like Twitch are kind of a way of doing that. It's just working out the best way of doing them. And then obviously you realize, you know, there's a lot happening in the world right now. This is a very important moment politically and socially. And I think we're in a time of big change. And I think going out on tour, we've always tried to be kind of subtly vocal. We always put posters up at shows, like leading to, because mental health has always been a big, I don't know, I've known a lot of people who've suffered and suffered quietly. And so we've always gone up and put posters in the bathrooms and things of like places, charities that you can,
wow, yeah, really
where you can
helpful.
Find help.
Yeah.
But I think we can take that to another level now, seeing how, yes. like, and there's so many, you know, mental health probably isn't the only place to to go. I think that's probably, it's very, very important and very close to me. But there are other things we can do to help. We're doing some other stuff. We can do a lot more charity and help more. I know we can. And I think we'll do that next time we tour. I've got some ideas.
Amazing. Well, I can't wait to see what happens. And hopefully I'll catch you at one of the shows in 2044. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Next year.
2044. See you in Chicago.
This Must Be the Gig is produced by Adam Kivel. We'd like to thank Dean Berger and Daniel Brater for additional music, as well as the Consequence Podcast Network. Hey! If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod. And generally, just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again, and I miss you already.
Consequence Podcast Network.